Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Maybe the single most entertaining game I've watched all season in Major League Baseball last night at Fenway Park, and it ended this way with Tim Nevert on the call.
Christian swings, hits a drive to center field. This ball's back. It is gone! It is gone! A walk-off home run! Christian Vasquez does it! Two outs in the ninth. A three-run homer for Vasquez. His second of the year. And the Red Sox win the ball game. 12-10.
A three-hour and 45-minute passion play in which the pendulum of momentum in the game swung dramatically back and forth all night. On a night where you would have figured it would be a 2-1, 3-2 game with Chris Sale and Carlos Carrasco on the mound. And they both got knocked out last night. Two great closers. They closed nothing. Neither one of them. 12-10 was the final. Just pure entertainment. All right, this is part of our preview this week of several different conferences. We're going to take a look today at the Big 12, the Pac-12, and the Big 10. Let's start with the Big 12. Dave Hunsinger is the play-by-play voice at Oklahoma State. I've heard Dave for years on SiriusXM. He does a great job. Welcome. It's great to have you with us on the show.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. It's been a fun place to be the last several years, I can tell you that.
Yeah, it has been. They've poured a little bit of money in there, haven't they? I mean, the stadium and everything else.
It all happened fast. You know, they were so far behind. And I came in 2001, and the stadium project started in 2004. And the stadium was dreadful. I mean, it was just dreadful. And the athletic department had no money. I mean, they could barely function financially at a Big 12 level, let alone try to do anything from a facility standpoint. But thanks to Boone Pickens and others, not only did it happened fast with very little debt on the back end, and the results have been amazing. You know, you think about what Work Less Miles did initially to get things started, yeah, and then Mike Gundy taking over. It's been an unbelievable transformation that happened really fast.
What does Mike Gundy bring to the table as a head coach that you have appreciated over the years?
Creativity, a willingness to go outside the box and do things that some people would say, well, you can't do it that way, and he says, well, yes, you can. There are several examples of that. The creation of an air raid attack that utilizes a tight end and a fullback. That was a Dana Holgorsen Gundy, Joe Wickline creation that happened here in 2010, the 1 year Dana was here. That was a major transformation offensively, and the influence of that have been felt all across football at all levels. That's certainly probably the biggest thing schematically. And then there are other things. You know, he was one of the first that backed off practices. That doesn't really allow contact in the preseason, and especially during the season. There's not much hitting done at all, and he was doing that back in 2010, 2011, when hardly anybody was doing it, and was, you know, in a non-scientific way. You know, we didn't have the gadgets we have now to track player workload, but he was monitoring that sort of manually, and I think kind of a leader in that area, because he realized we don't have the depth to hit every day in practice, because if our first string guys get hurt, our second string guys aren't nearly as good, so let's keep those guys healthy, and I think that served him well. So those are two of the big things, I think.
When you look at the Big 12, you talked about the Big 12 only allows two contact periods, and one of them is Saturday, the game. Is that correct in terms of what the Big 12 allows?
Well, of course, everybody has scaled back with the new NCAA rules. That's right. All been scaled back. But, no, I think there are teams that hit pretty hard in our league or have hit pretty hard in our league.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how they manage any guidelines that may be in place, but there are some teams in our conference that get after it. Preseason and probably just more so in the regular season than say Oklahoma State does. I won't share examples, but those are pretty obvious who they are.
Right.
K-State likes to hit.
Yeah.
They hit a lot in the preseason.
Right. That's Bill Snyder.
Yeah, very different. I mean, there are very different philosophies across the board in our league. But yeah, there are different approaches, but it's been scaled back here for years.
Why is this league so offensive oriented? Is it just because there's so much talent on offense, or is there a definite defensive problem in the league?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I think a lot of times what happens is a skilled player that's a wide receiver in the Big 12 may be a safety or corner in the SEC. They just choose to utilize those players differently. Then I think one thing you have to remember in the Big 12, because the tempo is so fast, traditional defensive stats aren't quite as useful. Now, they still have some value, certainly. We don't want to just poo-poo that. But it's, you know, it points per possession are probably a bigger statistic in the Big 12 because the offenses are pretty much all no huddle.
Right.
Everybody plays fast. Sometimes they'll go super fast tempo, so there's more possessions in a game. So two examples of statistics that sometimes get out of whack are your yards allowed and, to some extent, your points allowed. Points allowed per possession is probably a better measurement. And does that mean any of the defenses in the Big 12 historically have been great? I think we'd be really snowing you guys if we said that. But they're probably not as bad as people perceive them to be. But a lot of it is a matter of where are you putting your resources. And in the Big 12, most everybody, you look at the coaches across the board in the league, Dana Holgorsen, Mike Gundy are two classic examples. Of course, Coach Kingsbury at Texas Tech. You got a lot of offensive-oriented guys. Now, you've got a few defensive guys, too. I mean, Gary Patterson is as defensive-oriented as you'll find.
No doubt.
But you've had a lot of offensive-oriented coaches in this conference.
Yeah, and Matt Rule's now been added to it. Matt thinks offense as well. When you look at the Big 12, there's a constant theme about down the road, what's going to happen? What's that atmosphere been like in the state where there always has to be reassurance that the conference is going to continue on and the next 5 years? What's that like with that uncertainty, it seems, that hangs over it? Is it more uncertainty from us from the outside looking in, or is it internal as well?
It's not as bad as it was maybe a year or two ago. It seems to be a little bit better. Is it gone away? Absolutely not. That's not the case. It's interesting in our state with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State because I think one of the fears is that Oklahoma would go off on their own and leave Oklahoma State, leave them behind. Now, politically in this state, and one of the major reasons that probably will never happen is it's political suicide. In the state of Oklahoma and the legislature, the presidents of Oklahoma and Oklahoma State worked together in the legislature to gather up higher education dollars, which have been few and far between, I might add, in recent years.
Right.
But they go to gather up dollars in the legislature. The current president of Oklahoma, David Boren, is a former U.S. senator and from Oklahoma and governor of the state. His family not only has ties to Oklahoma, but to Oklahoma State as well. So as long as he's president, I don't think Oklahoma would ever leave and go to, say, the SEC without Oklahoma State. So that's probably the biggest anxiety that people have here. Will Oklahoma and Oklahoma State go together? But I think the league seems to be a little more stable now than it was, and I think one of the reasons that's the case is the old model of a television network now doesn't work like it used to because of the debundling of cable.
Right.
The Big 12's probably better off that they didn't start an over-the-air league much later than anybody else. They would have benefited the first 3 or 4 years, but if they would have started one, say, a year and a half ago using the old over-the-air model, it would have been a disaster.
Right.
So probably better than what it was, but there's anxiety on a daily basis about where it's going, sure.
All right. Texas, obviously, they have the Longhorn Network, and they're Texas. What are the pluses of Texas being in the league, and are there negatives because of their side agreements that don't benefit other schools in the league?
I think if you ask fans in the conference, they would tell you there's no benefit whatsoever to having. That's what fans would say.
Right.
And honestly, right now, they have a national brand, but the headaches probably outweighed the benefits.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just reality. I mean, the Longhorn Network is what got all of this stirred up.
Yep.
And really alienated Texas A&M, alienated Nebraska. People at Missouri and in Nebraska would tell you that the reason they left the league, they just got sick of dealing with Texas. Colorado fits better in the Pac-12 anyway. That's more their culture. And, of course, A&M, we don't have to say that their dislike for Texas is at a
it's intense.
Is at a fervor pitch.
It's intense.
Colorado probably made the move they needed to make, and everybody was cool with that. They understood that. But,
right.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure right now, to be honest, that the benefits of having them outweigh the negatives. They certainly don't outweigh the historical issues they've caused. I mean, good grief. I mean, that's what stirred all this up.
Sure.
Got things churning. So it's an interesting thing with Texas, and everybody always is curious, if the league were to fall apart, what would happen to them?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, what league would say, are we going to allow all that? It would really be interesting. I have no idea what the answer would be.
What are your initial expectations for Oklahoma State football this year?
I'm still trying to figure that out. As many returning stars as they have, fans here will tell you they think they've got a chance to not only win the conference but make the playoff. That's entirely possible. Double-digit wins the last 2 years, bringing back a quarterback and a receiver that may be in the Heisman mix, Mason Rudolph and James Washington,
right.
Reloading the defense to some extent. But this is a team, if they can go from being a really good team to being a dominant team, and there's a little mental piece of that that goes along with it, then they'll have a chance to win the league and make the playoff. But they've got to make that jump. And why I say that is, last year, Oklahoma State rallied from 17 down in the second half to beat Iowa State in Stillwater. Iowa State, a team that didn't even make a bowl. They had to come from 13 down at Kansas State to win in Manhattan.
Right.
Like to see them become more dominant, because if one of these days you'll try to pull one of those off and you'll make a untimely mistake and you'll end up losing one of those games, and then that playoff dream is gone. So that's what I'm speaking of.
Yeah. What do you think of the format they have for a Big 12 championship game?
You want the truth? Probably. Yeah. I better be careful saying this. I think it's dreadful. I understand why they did it,
yeah.
But we don't have divisions. You're going to ask a team potentially to play and beat another team that they've already beaten in the regular season, and they may have beaten them on the road.
Right.
I don't like it at all. I know it was done for money. I know it was done to add that extra game, but here's my point. Let's ratchet up the non-conference schedules as best we can in the Big 12. Let's figure out a way, without doing something that's kind of contrived and, to me, silly, to try to get an extra game. And, of course, if it's done for the money, then that's the most horrific idea of all. As our athletic director said to me, getting on a plane in Austin, Texas in 2008, never forget what Mike Holder said to me, when you stage a competition with major implications and consequences for the winner, but the real reason you're doing it is money, it's a horrible idea, and you're going to live with some bad, bad circumstances. And it's true, yeah. And that's kind of where we are in the Big 12, so I don't like it at all. But I know some people do, but I don't like it. I think it's goofy.
One final question, and it's going to be a very personal question. You and I ascended to our current jobs about a year apart. I started doing Penn State football, the play-by-play, in 2000. You started in 2001, but my circumstances were a legendary voice, great man, retired. Thus, the job was open. I got it. You got into the spot because, obviously, of a tragedy. Those who may not remember the three planes that went down at Oklahoma State. How long did it take you, Dave, to really, I don't know, get comfortable with the whole thing and have people be comfortable with you?
I would say maybe a year to a year and a half.
Yeah.
This is a unique place. From day one, they were so good to me and so nice to me and so accepting, and that's what makes this place special. They just welcome everybody in, and if you're in the family, you're in the family, and they'll forgive most of your shortcomings just because they consider you part of the family, and that's what makes this place unique. I'm not sure that I could have ever gone anywhere else and had the type of transition and the ease of transition from the fans that I had here, because they're just such nice people across the board. And so I was pretty fortunate about the support I had here and just how kind people were. And they'd say a kind word. I don't know if they meant it or not, but they said it. It meant a lot
right,
to me.
Right.
I mean, it was. So this is a really neat place. You know, we sit off here in north central Oklahoma, an hour from Tulsa, an hour from Oklahoma City, and the summers are absolutely dreadfully hot, although this one's been better than most. And,
right.
You know, it's a place that is unique. It's, you know, it's not a place that you just run into if you're just driving down the road, but it is an absolutely wonderful place, and it's a great place for a kid to go to college and play sports and play at a high level. And so kind of a little sleeping giant that's emerged here in Stillwater, and I've been fortunate to get to watch it and fortunate that they put up with me long enough that I could stay.
I know that feeling. Just very quickly, are you going to do the Barclays tournament in hoops? Are you going to do the Barclays tournament? Good. I will see you there then.
I'm excited. Yeah, it'll be. We should let you guys play A&M in the semifinals. I don't know if we want any part of those guys. They're going to be loaded.
Yeah, I know. I saw when the Williams kid decided to come back. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me, really? I mean,
we're reloading our basketball roster with a brand new head coach, first time head coach Mike Boynton, who I think can do a really nice job. And he's putting some pieces together this year, but we'll see.
Yeah. Then I will see you in Brooklyn. I look forward
awesome.
To it, Dave. I look forward
Me
to
too.
It.
Me too. Thanks for the visit.
Thank you. Dave Hunziker, the play-by-play voice at Oklahoma State, giving us a look at the Big 12. Dave Revson still coming up final half hour. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Dave Revson, next half hour. And Dave's going to be here in town. I think he's here a week from tomorrow on the Big Ten Tour.
So we'll talk to Dave in the next half hour. And Roxy Bernstein from the Pac-12 Network, we're going to move Rox to tomorrow. Roxy's going to go to tomorrow. All right, so that's what we'll do with that. And also tomorrow we're going to have Phil Steele on the show. Jim Delaney on Friday. And so Jim Delaney, Phil Steele, Roxy Bernstein. We have Dade Hunziker on today. We had Ray Fittipaldo on today. Do we have any room for the play-by-play voice of Shikellamy football?
See what I can do. Maybe we'll find something.
Or
just a play-by-play call of the day clip, or you mean or an interview segment? You mean?
Oh, interview segment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mac Catrillo.
Okay.
Yeah. Filling in for.
Yes.
It's not funny.
Yeah. I'll give Matt credit, though. He and his wife celebrated their one-month wedding anniversary yesterday. They had a little picnic dinner down at Shikellamy State Park last night.
Good for them.
Yeah, he's posting pictures on Facebook, and I'm thinking, okay. I gotta step my game up.
No, it makes the rest of us look bad.
I know.
Now, Matt did the baseball game on TV, right?
Yes, he was on. I was really
July 23rd.
Yeah, week ago Sunday, was on with Joe, doing the Spikes game there in State College on the MyTV channel, and I was hoping I would. I was really. I really bummed I couldn't get a chance to see it. But
yeah,
he said he really had a great time working with Joe and with, of course, Kerry Stroh, John Stroh. He didn't tell. He didn't want me to relay to you. Oh, hope he takes more vacations. This is fun. but he had a terrific time. He and Joe hit it off really well.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm not surprised.
Oh, and you played a part of Matt getting that. So you played a big part.
It's irrelevant. What I do. In the end, people are in their spots. That's good. I'm glad it went really, really well for him because Matt's a quality guy. And if had been given the chance, he would have done an awesome job of Shickley in football. Right now he's in this car. That's not funny.
Yeah, to make up for that, we'll definitely get Matt on with me on our game night shows.
Well, I mean, we're going to obviously come back with our Thursday previews right before the season starts.
Mm-hmm.
I always enjoy those Thursday wraparound segments that we do.
Greg Wetzel told me to tell you hello. Stopped in last Friday.
Oh, Greg's a great guy.
Yep, looking forward to
have... We have a lot of great guys working for us.
Looking forward to have Greg back on the mic for Lewisburg, year number two for Greg.
Now, is Matt going to do something for us, or is he going to be in a reserve role?
Reserve role, doing some freelance writing and that kind of thing, yeah.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if like somebody has to like visit Albright to see how things are going.
Homecoming weekend, yes.
You know, homecoming.
Parents weekend.
Something like that. Parents weekend. I'm really tired weekend. Yeah.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th-rated Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It is great to have you with us on the show today. Feels great to be back. Sean did not agree with that, but that's okay. You'll have to soldier on.
No, it's awesome you're back. It sounds like you got a pep in your step.
Oh, I've been to practice the last couple of nights. You do that, you're going to get a pep in your step. The sports bozo of the day is rather obvious. All right. The Phillies announced today that Pete Rose will not take part in the team's alumni weekend festivities, quote, due to recent events. Rose had been voted by the fans to be inducted into the team's Wall of Fame. Outside the Lines reported this week that a sworn statement by an unidentified woman contained in a motion filed in John Dowd's defense against Rose's defamation lawsuit alleges that Rose had a sexual relationship with a woman for several years in the 70s, beginning before she turned 16. Now, he's denied, obviously, parts of this. He's acknowledged that he had a sexual relationship with the woman in court documents, but said his information and belief was that it started when she was 16. And 16 is the legal age of consent in Ohio. So there you go. How much more do you want? I'm not going to go any further with that story.
We'll have to see if he'll be back on Fox Sports. So far, Fox Sports has declined comment on the allegations. Next appearance on either Fox or FS1 is undecided. It'd be interesting to see the fine print of his contract if there's like a morales clause in his contract. Maybe he won't be back.
I don't know. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
All right. Let's bring in Dave Revson, Big Ten Network, trying to turn things around. Dave, welcome. It is always great to have you with us.
Well, Steve, I like being brought into a segment with the sports bozo of the day.
Yeah,
because I can only look better, right?
Let me put it this way. I have to follow that every day. What does that tell you? First of all, I hope you have had a great summer. So
really, really good. It is officially over, I would say. We get on the bus tomorrow and begin our tour. We'll be in State College a week from today.
Good.
Checking out the Nittany Lions. So we head east first and fired up. It's always fun. The nice thing about having the summer wind down is how much I like my job. So it's the best of both worlds, I guess.
Yep, same here. when you the camp tour for you guys, how invaluable is not only to see it firsthand, but the conversations that you have leading up to the actual program itself?
Yeah, can't overstate how important the tour is on so many different levels. One of them is kind of what you're talking about, is being able to talk to the coaching staffs, being able to talk to players, and just kind of getting a sense of what they're thinking going into the year, getting insight that really, you know, we're the only ones who have that opportunity to get. And it is a fabulous opportunity, and everyone kind of welcomes us with open arms. The other part of it is getting to watch for ourselves, getting to evaluate, hey, how's this quarterback battle going? How do we feel like this line's coming together? Whatever it might be, you get to watch guys practice. It's a snapshot. It's one day. Sometimes I feel like maybe we read a little bit too much into that one day, but you certainly can glean a lot from being there and getting the vibe.
Right. No, there's no question. I think practice is invaluable. I mean, invaluable, because it at least gives you a read about where certain things stand, as you mentioned, in that snapshot moment. When you look at this conference, I mean, everyone talks about the East-West balance, but let's start with the East. How important has it been to you that the East has had, now at the moment, has three signature teams at the moment in this power grab in college football right now, that they have that kind of concentration?
Yeah, it's immense. I mean, it's not great for some of the programs at the bottom part of the league, you know, of the division. I mean, it's very challenging for Rutgers and Maryland here trying to rebuild their programs to catch up. I mean, I think Indiana would do anything it possibly could to be able to move its campus 1 mile to the west of West Lafayette.
Right, exactly.
And switch sides of the bracket. So for them, it's not great, but for the league in general, I mean, you have arguably the best division in college football. I think it's between the Big Ten East and the SEC West. And it's great. I mean, you know, to have those games that you're guaranteed every year, your marquee programs are going to go head-to-head, or a lot of them are going to go head-to-head anyway. From that point of view, it's been fabulous. And you know, I think this is shaping up just in terms of the preseason, because obviously last year going into the year, people weren't speaking about Penn State in the way they're speaking about them this year. Now, they were speaking more highly about Michigan State. But still, I mean, I just think the anticipation this year for that side of the league is as high as it's been.
What kind of respect do you have for the job Urban Meyer has done, where he loses a lot of early entries into the draft seemingly every year, and yet they're still in the spot that they're in?
Yeah, I mean, it's staggering. Last year, they returned the fewest starters in the country, 6, and they still made it to the college football playoff. I know it didn't go well, but I still think that speaks volumes about how good he is. Now, this year, they have the most returning all-conference players of any team in the league in 14. So from that point of view, it's a different narrative this year than it was last year. But, I mean, the guy's done an unbelievable job. He's been there for 5 years. He's lost 6 games. I mean, it's just crazy how good he's been, the level of consistency, whether he's replacing players or not, Steve. He just recruits at such a high level, as you know, that they always have the next guy ready to go.
Which then brings me now to Michigan. For the first couple of years, Jim Harbaugh has done a great job of making talent that Brady Hoke recruited better, plus mixing in his own. Now there's starting to be more of an influx of the guys he recruited in there. What do you see with Michigan right now?
Fascinating team. I mean, the most players drafted of any team in the country with 11. That isn't generally a great formula for success. As you mentioned, though, he has recruited at a very high level, and you do have to give a ton of credit, I think, to Brady, because all those guys who left for the draft are Brady Hoke guys, and he recruited them and developed some of them, at least early on in their career. So let's give credit there. I mean, he may not have been able to put all the pieces together, but he, you know, the cupboard was far from bare when Jim Harbaugh got there. Now we're really going to get to gauge his recruiting, and there are some really good players, young players at Michigan. We saw some of them, you know, a little bit last year. We're going to get a much better sense. You know, Rashawn Gary, obviously, everyone talks about what a great camp he had. You know, I really like some of their young skill position guys last year. I thought Eddie McDoom, Chris Evans, guys like that made their presence felt pretty early on. So this is the next step here, and can they they go from, you know, being high-level recruits who are able to make a nice early impact to guys who lead you to a division title. I'm not sure they can because of how good Penn State and Ohio State are going to be, but, you know, that's the formula here. And you think about kind of, hey, here's what Urban Meyer did in year three. Let's see what Jim Harbaugh can do. I mean, Urban Meyer won a national championship in year three.
Right. You and I have had enough conversations over the last 6 years about the road back here at Penn State. We've had a lot of conversations about it, privately and on the air as well. Now that they've done what they've done, with still more work to do, obviously, how impressed have you been by how they've been able to get back to the point they are now?
Really amazing. I do think it's remarkable. You know, it's the 10th anniversary of BTN. It'll be August 30th, and so we are doing a series of shows retrospectively looking back on each year. And today we did 2011, 2012, and Mike and Rick and I sat around and kind of talked about our memories of that year, and it just isn't that long ago. And to think about how dramatically things have changed at State College, how dramatically the narrative has changed, you know, part of it, obviously, is that some of the sanctions were lifted, but part of it is just a remarkable job administratively, making the right hires, kind of everything that they have done correctly in terms of getting the football product back to where people expect it to be. And I have to say, as I kind of thought back to what I had going through my mind when all that was going down, you know, I thought 10, 15 years. I mean, I really did. I mean, I thought it was going to be utterly crippling, and it just wasn't. And I think a ton of credit has to be given to Bill O'Brien and how stable he was and how, you know, it didn't take the gigantic crater that I think some of us feared it might. But then give a ton of credit to James, who's come in, recruited at an exceptional level. His energy, I think, is infectious, and it's really been incredible to see.
I think something that he's done, I'll run this past you, but that by coming in the way he did, and he didn't have the givebacks initially, and then all of a sudden it started happening, but he redshirted as if he had 85 guys because he was looking big picture. What kind of impact did forward thinking have for him as to what we see now?
Yeah, I mean, huge, right? Particularly, I think, on the offensive line where the temptation would have been to just, you know, kind of do whatever you can as a stopgap measure. I mean, they took their lumps there, and now, you know, to me, you've got a really experienced group there. They were vastly improved last year. I admire Matt Limegrover's work for quite some time when he was in Minnesota. He's a guy that Jerry and Howard and I have always thought really highly of. It was a brilliant hire, and, you know, to your point, kind of a, you know, bringing guys along and waiting until they're ready. I mean, they've done a tremendous job of that, and we saw the fruits of that last year.
In the West, is it still, in your opinion, the same group that will fight it out in the West, or has that changed a little bit?
Well, I think Wisconsin is kind of head and shoulders the best team in the West. You know, you talk about returning all conference players from last year. I mentioned that with Ohio State. Wisconsin has the second most in the league. They won the division last year. Their schedule is far more favorable. I mean, last year the big hesitation in picking them was, man, that schedule's so brutal with Michigan State, Michigan, and Ohio State in successive weeks. That's not the case this year. I mean, of the top teams in the East, Michigan is the only one they have to play, and they get them in Madison. So I guess until I see someone prove otherwise, I feel like Wisconsin's the best team. Can someone challenge them? Yeah, I mean, I think Northwestern will be good. I think Iowa will be good. Nebraska will be good. But are any of them at the level of Wisconsin without having seen them? You know, I always reserve the right to change my opinion after we go to practice.
Right.
But without having seen them, I'd say no. I think Wisconsin's pretty clear-cut the better team.
Nebraska's come in and they've done some good things in the conference, but they've also been inconsistent. Have you been surprised by that?
I have been. I mean, I do think, again, you kind of think about our 10 years in retrospective of what we were thinking when the Big Ten added Nebraska. I mean, when they added them, you were talking about four of the eight winningest programs in the history of college football in one league. And I did think, you know enough about Nebraska to know that the landscape had changed a little bit, particularly in recruiting. I don't think anyone's been hurt more by the way that the recruiting calendar has been kind of fast-forwarded, that kids commit as early as they do now, that they commit, you know, that a lot of these schools have virtually their entire class committed right now.
Right.
And you can't pay for official visits until players start their senior year. So at a place like Nebraska, when people are committing on unofficials, when they don't have a lot of players in their region, when it's hard for players to get there, when you really have to say, man, I really want to see Nebraska in order to make an unofficial there, which, just so people understand, you're paying for an unofficial out of your own pocket, I think that's really hurt them. And so these new recruiting rules, I believe, will help Nebraska more than certainly any school in our league, and as much as virtually any school in the country. That being said, you know, look, they were kind of consistent in what they were. They were 9 wins every year. They just didn't win the big games. And then, of course, tanked in the first year under Mike Riley with a lot of close losses. I think they'll be better this year. I really do. I'm very interested to see Tanner Lee at quarterback. Yeah. People were raving about him at the Manning Passing Academy. And then Bob Diaco. I mean, that's a dramatic change for Mike Riley, the nicest guy in football, to fire Mark Banker, who had been with him for 20 years, 14 as his defensive coordinator.
I know.
And hire Bob Diaco. It's a little bit of a gamble. It's a bit of a risk. But I will say this. They are recruiting better for those who follow those rankings. I think we've already seen an uptick there. And I do think there's some talent there. I give Mike Riley some credit for when he came in, he saw he had a good quarterback in Tommy Armstrong. And I think he acknowledged and said to himself, okay, I could either try to do square peg and round hole here and try to plug him into my offense in, you know, kind of much the same way Rich Rodriguez did it. Michigan with Denard Robinson, you know, and not having a player of his caliber right away, and kind of taking the guys that were left there, Stephen Threet, those guys, and you know, how do I figure this out? Versus saying, okay, Tommy Armstrong's got a great skill set, and we'll lean our offense more toward what he does, and then we'll figure it out after he's gone. And I give Mike Riley credit for doing that. And so this is the first time we'll really see his offense, and I'm interested to see what it looks like.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. It's been 3 years, by the way, since your book, The Opening Kickoff, The Tumultuous Birth of a Football Nation, was released. And it made the bestseller list in the New York Times. It made the bestseller list in the Boston Globe. How gratifying has the reception to the book been, and have you thought about a follow-up?
Okay. I'll do the second part first. I've thought about a follow-up. I've articulated some thoughts to my wife about, well, maybe I'll do another one someday. And she has articulated, not for a long, long time. it was very time-consuming. It took 4 years to write it. It was a ton of research. Time that was normally kind of downtime and family time for me. It ended up being time that I spent in archives reading newspapers from the 1890s. And while I think she was very proud with me of the result, she's not really anxiously awaiting me getting back at that, given that we have some young kids. So that's the second part. As to how gratifying it was awesome, Steve. I mean, it really is. There's something so intensely personal about it. It was a story that I stumbled upon that I really wanted to tell, and especially as we're only a couple years away from what will be the 150th anniversary of college football, and so I do think, you know, maybe there will be some new legs for the story, and at least some new interest anyway in the early history of the game, and so I'm looking forward to talking about a bit more about it here in the years to come.
I loved that book. When that
Thank
book
you.
Came up, I had you on the show to talk about it, but I loved that book. It was really, it was really well done. A couple things that struck me. Things aren't as different today as we think they are.
Yeah.
That really struck me. And number two, you talked about the research. You could tell how detailed it was, where you got away from mythology and got into facts.
Yeah, that part's hard. I mean, it was especially hard given, you know, first of all, that you're digging through these archives, and so, you know, it's finding the right newspapers and knowing which papers you can trust and which you can't, because this was the era of yellow journalism, and so people were exaggerating their stories to sell papers, and so that part of it, of trying to separate fact from fiction, it was a big challenge. It was a lot of fun, but it was very, very, very time-consuming. There's no doubt about it.
Well, I look forward to seeing you next week when you get to your next time-consuming part, and that's camp tours.
Yes, yes, it pales in comparison, though.
Yeah.
A lot more fun, and really looking forward to connecting with you, as I always do when we're out there, and to seeing all these teams and getting back into it with Jerry and Howard. Crazy to think it's our 11th year of covering the Big Ten together.
That's great. That is great. Thanks so much, Dave. Always great to hear from you, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
Cool. Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Dave Revson, Big Ten Network. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Our thanks to Ray Fittipaldo talking about the Steelers from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Dave Hunsinger, the play-by-play voice at Oklahoma State about the Big 12. And Dave Revson from BTN on the Big 10. Tomorrow, Roxy Bernstein is going to join us. Talk about the Pac-12 from the Pac-12 Network. Also tomorrow, Phil Steele. He puts out his annual is... I think the most trusted of any annual out there. It'll be great to have Phil Steele back on the show. And then Friday, Jim Delaney, Commissioner of the Big Ten. So we have a lot going on the show. A lot of great guests. It's, you know, Dave does the play-by-play for Oklahoma State. Roxy does the play-by-play in the Pac-12 Network. Dave does some play-by-play of basketball on the Big Ten Network. We've got Kevin Herr, the voice of Shikellamy, on the show sometime. We've got all sorts of play-by-play guys on there.
We do.
I just thought when we went over in May to Susquehanna Valley Country Club, didn't you think it was a bit pretentious of the suit to have a press conference about his return?
Well, you know. Now I get that's the reason why he forgot it to send his wife a happy birthday that morning.
Now it
all makes sense.
I have to tell you this story. You're gonna love this story. I'm at Cape Cod and I'm playing golf. And I'm talking to a couple of guys there. And I was telling them about, you know, what a great time we had at Susquehanna Valley that day. I mean, great time. You know, and the point of the story was playing from the gold tees. Remember how Craig and Dave play from the gold tees, right?
Yep.
So that was the point of the story. And then I brought up the Chudder.
Oh, boy.
And every person in the group looked at me and like, what the heck's that? Every person, every one of them, they're like, the what?
Cape Cod and golfing with the Chudder doesn't mix.
I explained it to them and they looked at me and says, who would use that? I said, exactly.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.